This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. This week we are continuing our monthly series on aging. In February, we talked about the growing number of Wisconsinites with dementia. In 2010, an estimated 4.7 million Americans over the age of 65 had Alzheimer's disease, the most common form of dementia. That number is expected to triple by the year 2050. And most of the people living with dementia rely on family members to care for them as their condition progresses. This week, we'll continue our conversation about dementia, but turn our focus to the loved ones and other people who support those with the condition. Joining us today to talk about the challenges and joys of caregiving are Amy Brzezinka, coordinator of the Caregiver Coach Program in La Crosse County, Carol Monsebraten, team leader for the Share the Care Program, and Chris Bergdahl, a family member of someone with dementia. And Amy, if we could start by having you talk a little bit about the Caregiver Coach Program.
I was hired in March 2013, by the Aging Unit, which is now part of the Aging and Disability Resource Center. We integrated as of January 1st, 2016. So I was hired to develop a program through the Helen Bader, a grant through the Helen Bader Foundation to provide encouragement and support to family caregivers who are caring for somebody with a chronic illness, dementia, Parkinson's, and to provide them that extra support and information about resources and help them get connected to those services.
Do you think that a lot of caregivers don't know that there are resources like your program out there?
Yeah, that's been the hard part, is making sure people understand the program's there. We market it in a lot of different ways. But a lot of times a person is caregiving and not realizing they are a caregiver. They're just they're the husband, they're the wife, they're caring for the person they love, they're the son, they're the daughter. Sometimes the neighbor is helping someone. And so I don't think they realize they are a caregiver. And so once they realize they are caregiving, then that kind of opens a window to, oh, there are a lot of services out there, once they recognize that.
Mm-hmm. And Carol, now you're a part of a little different program, and you're actually helping fill the role of a caregiver for someone. Do you want to talk a little bit about the Share the Care program?
Sure. A while ago, a friend of ours, his partner was showing some signs of not tracking. She wasn't quite herself, and I would mention it to some other friends. Oh, she's just depressed, or she's tired. And I'm like, okay, you know. And then this went on for months and months, and I was just reaching a point where I knew people cared, but they just didn't know how to go forward with that and say, is there something we can help with, or we've noticed, or how to do that. So I went to ADRC knowing nothing about anything, and I walked in there and met with Amy, and I said, I just had this idea that we can all come together, and how can we do this? Because nobody's talking to each other. And she said, here, Share the Care. This is a wonderful program. And she told me about it, and I've been a disciple since then. I mean, it's absolutely, it's just such a workable, doable, wonderful thing, because everyone shares and honors each other. And it just... It's a beautiful concept. So we pulled together some friends, and I'm gently kind of being the leader in the sense that I am nudging people a little bit this way and that way, because everybody's busy, and people don't want to, you know, overstep. So, you know, I'm kind of just in there to coordinate some things, and we meet. As we decide we're needing to come together again, it's like it's time for a meeting. So Amy is our coach, our leader, and we're just so thrilled to be able to be doing this, because it's, I don't know what we'd do without this, really.
Yeah, and can you talk a little bit about the Share the Care concept? You know, how do you coordinate amongst a team? You know, what are the kind of the roles for people?
Well, what we do is, right now, it's a small team. There are seven of us who are actively calling ourselves team members, although we do have some satellite friends that kind of are, but they haven't really committed. Basically, what we do our friend, it depends on where she is physically and mentally. She's having some difficulties with things now that she wasn't having before. So we're kind of readjusting what our jobs are as being, you know, able to assist the caregiver, her partner. People are kind of using me as the person to communicate, so everybody's not going specifically to our caregiver friend, so he's not just answering everybody's questions. Plus, he needs time to just have downtime without always answering questions. So we've set up a team, and we have right now we're communicating mostly with email. And for those who are challenged or refuse to use email, we are using phones, possibly smartphones, definitely flip phones. But anyway, we're communicating as best we can, and it's working quite well. We are also, I really am kind of working now on a tool from the Alzheimer's organization. It's a calendar that's an online calendar that is user-friendly. We've looked at some other online calendars that I was very challenged with, and I have a college student, and she's a wizard, and she was challenged with them, and she said, okay, we can do this. So we're just making our own tools as we go, and following the lead of the basic principles of sharing the care. I mean, there's just some standard things that you need to be aware of, so we're kind of, she's our coach. She's leading us through it.
Yeah, and I think that's what's great about the team, because it's friends and can be family too that are already connected to the couple or to the partners. And so they kind of know, they feel the person with dementia already feels comfortable with these friends. And so the friends take on roles that they feel comfortable doing. Some people feel comfortable cooking a meal, and some people feel comfortable coming over and spending time with the person and taking the person out for lunch or going shopping. You know, it's just a very nice relationship, and the team supports that couple through that situation.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about resources and supports for people who care for loved ones with dementia. We're here with Amy Brzezinka, coordinator of the Caregiver Coach Program, Carol Monsebraten, team leader of a Share the Care team in La Crosse County, and Chris Bergdahl, a family member of someone with dementia. And Chris, I want to go to you and ask if you would mind, you know, telling us a little bit about how you became a caregiver.
When the caregiving began about a year ago, my mom at that time was in a relationship and was being cared for well by the person that she was with at that time. But a major kind of event took place where she was disoriented and left a building, and we weren't able to find her. And eventually she was found many miles away walking home. And it was just one of those kind of events where it was decided, gosh, things are progressing and we need to find a different way to care for her. We need more help. So my sisters and I then began kind of taking each of our own turns in caring for her. And so that's kind of when it began. We each took a chunk of time and began caring for her in the best way that we could, which was wonderful. But at the same time, all three of us are kind of part of that sandwich generation, trying to care for my mom and care for our own children. So it just really became a big challenge trying to coordinate our own families and make sure she was cared for, too. But that's kind of when it began, about a year ago.
Mm-hmm. And, Amy, is this common to see, you know, people having to juggle their, you know, the lives and the commitments that they had before they became a caregiver and the new role that they're taking on?
Yes, it's very common. More and more family caregivers are adult children with children of their own and working, and as the parents are aging, they are taking on that role of caregiver and, you know, making phone calls from work and having to take time off of work and juggle all of that. And it can be very stressful and overwhelming for people.
Mm-hmm. And Chris, I don't know if you have, you know, tried to, in your experience as a caregiver, did you ever try to access, you know, resources through an ADRC or another program to, you know, as a caregiver, as, you know, just someone who in that support group?
Sure. Well, you know, I did try a few things, and each of my sisters and I, you know, researched a little bit, but honestly, I think we kind of got caught up in, you know, I have a full-time job and a part-time job and four children, and sometimes I would know about a meeting coming up or a group that I could meet with, but I really just didn't have the time to get there, or it was during the day while I was at work, and I just really felt like I couldn't leave my job. And then we actually did kind of meet as a group and kind of start something like a Share the Care type program, but then my sisters and I also felt a bit overwhelmed asking other people that, you know, that were friends of my mom's, and we just kind of felt like, oh, you know what, we're just going to take it all on ourselves. It's just going to be easier that way, which it isn't, but we were kind of reluctant to reach out too much for help. So we knew about some ideas, but found it kind of difficult with our time restraints to really get involved.
Yeah, and do you wish that there was something, you know, more available to you? I mean, could there have been something that, you know, a resource, a program, something that just didn't exist that you wish had when you were acting as a caregiver?
You know, some of the online resources were the easiest for us to go to because they were available and at our fingertips when we had a few moments. But honestly, I think just finding something that was easy, you know, that was available maybe in evening hours or something. But honestly, you know, we struggled to trying to find, do we bring her with us? Do we want to talk about how she's doing in front of her? You know, there are a lot of different parts of it that we just kept kind of, you know, not moving forward and getting involved. When I think, you know, now looking back, I would have liked to have done so, but I guess I'm not exactly sure what I would have done differently.
Amy, you know, from your perspective, serving in kind of, you know, this role of a resource provider, you know, what programs are available for people in Chris's situation where, you know, they have a very busy life and they're finding themselves having to take on different responsibilities?
That's right. You know, as we're, I'm hearing that a lot in the community. So we're trying to develop support groups and programs that can happen in the evening. There are really great support groups in our community that the caregiver can come with the person who has the dementia, and they split into two groups. So caregivers can talk privately, and the person with dementia gets to talk and have a conversation about what that's like for them as well. So there's really good support groups in our area. We just started a younger early onset dementia support group that meets the third Thursday of every month from 5:30 to 7 at First Lutheran Church. So it's we designed it that way for those working caregivers so they would be able to come. And we've also, that's correct, we try to put things on our website as well for caregivers. I do a family caregiver newsletter that goes out on our website for information about resources and other tips. So it is challenging, though.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that the way that we kind of provide resources to caregivers has changed?
Yes, and I think it's going to need to change. We're going to have to be really creative. As more and more caregivers like Chris are working and raising families, we have to think about how can we offer things, like I just said, in the evening or on the weekends, or where the person with dementia can come with and be maybe involved in a program while caregivers are learning about resources and things. So we're going to have to think creatively in our communities.
Mm-hmm. And Carol, I want to go to you because, you know, you're a caregiver, but, you know, kind of a different angle, you know, someone from not necessarily a family member of someone, but someone who kind of stepped up into that role. Do you think that there are, you know, more people like you who are seeing friends, seeing neighbors, kind of, you know, experiencing the hardships that come with having a loved one with dementia and, you know, kind of stepping up to the call?
Definitely. There's this is certainly a growing situation with the demographics of this country, and our reluctance to deal with difficult issues. And people have this sense of not wanting to bother anybody, and or it's shameful that somebody is not having the capacities that they had previously, or, you know, all this other kind of fog to work your way through. But I think just listening to people, being present to them, and they know that you're hearing them, you're not telling them what to do, you're just being present, and they know that, okay, this is, we can talk about something here, because we can have a conversation. Nobody's going to judge me or tell me what to do. And I think I'm seeing more of that because people need to talk about this. So that's kind of, I do see a growth in that, that people are, I think it's getting stronger. And it's encouraging because people are seeing things and feeling more comfortable reaching out to other people. I mean, a generation ago, nobody would have said, even to their neighbor, it's like, you know, my mother, my father, they're having some concerns and we need help. Nobody would have done that. So we're in a time and a place where we have a lot of resources and people that want to be tapped. You know, it's okay to tap us. So.
Mm-hmm. So you really feel like, you know, an increased understanding of what dementia is and,
yes.
and you know, how what that looks like has really contributed to better resources for caregivers.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Definitely.
In last month's show, we talked about changes in dementia care, and we're kind of talking about the condition broadly. And one of our guests said that a family caregiver once described dementia as a disease for the whole family, that it was something that, you know, the loved one's condition had really taken a toll on everyone in their family. Chris, do you feel like, you know, this description is relatable to your situation?
I do. I see, you know, when caring for my mom, not only did it affect, you know, the amount of time I had to spend with my children, but then there was also this pull where I noticed my mom needing me to be the one who gave her my full attention. And then a disconnect between she and her grandchildren where the children needed me and were looking for my attention, and she needed me and were looking for my attention. And when they both came to me at the same time, it just didn't work. So there was a period even where I noticed my children now were not finding love for their grandma anymore because she was no longer treating them the way that she used to. And then there's, you know, the relationship between a husband and a wife when you just don't have time to talk even sometimes anymore because you're caring for your mom. And I think, you know, that's just within my own family, but I can't even imagine what it's like if it is, you know, a husband caring for a wife or wife caring for a husband and how that affects, you know, their life. So I think each different person in the family is affected in some way, definitely. And, you know, there's lots of wonderful moments, but there are probably many more struggling times during those caring times that, yeah, it makes it very, very difficult for everyone in the family.
Mm-hmm. And were you able to connect with anyone who maybe was in a similar situation and or had been in a similar situation to learn from their experiences, whether that's, you know, in person or reading about their experiences online? I know that you mentioned web resources were important.
No, not so much for myself did I connect with someone. It seemed like many of the people that I would share stories with or talk with, they had cared for a grandparent. And it was different because my mom was diagnosed in her early 60s, and I really hadn't found many people that were dealing with someone so young. And so that would have been helpful, you know, to connect with someone else that was going through the same thing as we were with a young parent. Online, my sister did find some other people more so than I did, you know, and on. So I guess I just, the people that I did connect with didn't have the same experience. And I know with each and every person with dementia or Alzheimer's, you know, how they act and interact can be so different from the next person. So I didn't find necessarily someone that was dealing with the same situations as I was.
That's Chris Bergdahl, a family caregiver, here with us today to talk about caring for people with dementia. Also joining our conversation is Amy Brzezinka, coordinator of the Caregiver Coach Program here in La Crosse County, and Carol Monsebraten, a member of a Share the Care team. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And you know, Amy, we talked about how, you know, reaching out to people and educating them about what resources has kind of changed over the years. But, you know, have the kind of resources changed as well, you know, as we learn more about dementia?
I think that they are changing. We have some really good home care agencies in our community. And what is great about the La Crosse area is there is a wealth of resources if you just know how to connect to them. But there are some really good home care agencies. There's adult day programs where a person with memory loss could go for the day and get that activity and socialization they need. I've been developing some memory cafes in our area where people can come together. And again, it's really about connecting with other people, knowing that you're not alone. And you're learning actually from your peers, you're learning from others. But Chris is right, every situation is so different, and that's what's so confusing about dementia. One person will be affected totally different than another person. So although you can really learn a lot from talking with other caregivers at a memory cafe or a support group, the Alzheimer's Association is doing some education in our community as well, to really break that stigma, get the education out there so people learn about the disease.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously that when you're caring for a spouse or a parent or any kind of family member, you know, there's a lot of emotional stress that comes with that. But, you know, are there other stresses that we you know, we've talked a lot about the stress of time and the commitment that it takes to be a caregiver. But, you know, are there other stresses we haven't, you know, touched on?
And when I'm working with care partners in our community, there's depression and, you know, just the stress of, like I said, the disease itself is so confusing, and learning a new way to communicate with somebody, learning about all the resources while you are working and have young children of your own, you know, that's just stressful in itself. And the other thing that I see are people become isolated, because they're dealing so much with understanding the dementia, trying to put things in place, they become isolated in their home. And the number one important thing is to be social and to be out there and to be active. And even with dementia, you know, keep learning, keep being social. And I think the first thing that people do is isolate because they're nervous. They feel uncomfortable. And so that's stressful.
And Carol, I don't know if you wanted to, if you had any other thoughts on other stresses that people experience as a caregiver. I don't know if, you know, financial burdens or, you know, burdens on previous commitments.
I think all of that comes into play. Anything that is your daily life activity, it's magnified and it's warped and it's kind of getting bigger here and smaller there, and it changes all the time. So the whole idea about isolating and being depressed, I think, is a major point to consider, because when people are kind of pulling inward like that, they don't see what they're doing. You know, they're just treading water, and they don't see. So to be able to reach out and say, oh, yeah, okay, we're going to go do this and do that, to actually pull themselves up a notch, it's hard. So no matter how close the situation is between the care partner and the caregiver, there's a lot of pain and frustration, and it wears you out. And you know it's a disease, and you know it's progressive, and there's other parts of your body that are going to be getting complicated, and if the person that you're caring for isn't able to verbalize things that are going on, a sore joint, something in your back, some kind of infection somewhere, and you're seeing things and you don't know, well, I must be doing something wrong, you know, or why can't I fix this? So it gets to be a pretty tangled up thing. I think it's the nature of it, and it's that's why just having friends that are able to just be there, you know, it's just knowing that we have resources. I mean, this is an incredible place to live. I mean, we're so fortunate. And I think whatever we learn that we can pass on to other people will be a great gift.
Mm-hmm. And Amy, you know, I'm hearing from Carol that, you know, as a caregiver, you start to sometimes internalize things when things aren't going well, and you can, you know, take that on yourself as not doing a good job of caregiving. How do you help people to know that, you know, it's not their fault?
Yeah, and sometimes it's just saying that, you know, you're doing the best job that you can. This is very complicated to understand, and it's a roller coaster ride. So that's part of the coaching, is really encouraging people and reminding them that it is a disease and they're doing a good job. And there are things that they can put into place. The ADRC, the Aging and Disability Resource Center, has a great team of social workers there who can do long-term care options counseling and benefits counseling and just provide great information and resources as well. And the caregiver coach program can give that extra support to a care partner who is questioning, what, you know, is this right? I don't understand this resource. I tried this resource. It didn't seem to work. So that's my part, is coaching the caregivers along.
Amy Brzezinka, coordinator of the Caregiver Coach Program, is here with us today to talk about caregiving for people with dementia in the third installment of our monthly series on aging. Also joining us today is Carol Monsebraten, a team leader of a Share the Care team here in La Crosse County, and Chris Bergdahl, a family member of someone with dementia. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on caring for people with dementia. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find links to some of the resources and programs for dementia caregivers that we've talked about today. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're continuing our monthly series on aging in Wisconsin and neighboring states. As a larger percentage of our population reaches 65 and older, the number of people with Alzheimer's disease is expected to triple by the year 2050. And family members and others are faced with the challenge of caring for their loved ones with dementia. Joining us today to talk about dementia caregiving are Amy Brzezinka, coordinator of the Caregiver Coach Program here in La Crosse County, Carol Monsebraten, a team leader of the Share the Care team, and Chris Bergdahl, a family member of someone with dementia. And so, you know, we've been talking a lot about kind of the personal effects of being a caregiver. But Amy, do you think that there are also maybe larger community effects that, you know, we can expect as more people kind of take on the role of caregiving?
I think as more people, their wish is to remain at home to as long as they can. What I'm seeing is there's a shortage of home healthcare workers, and we could use more services like that. The adult day programs, we could use more. And it's hard to keep, I think the home care agencies are struggling to keep the staff that they need to serve as many people as we will have in the future. And hopefully we have some great colleges in our area. Hopefully students are thinking about careers in gerontology and becoming geriatricians and nurses. And we're going to need everybody.
And Carol, I don't know if you have also kind of seen just effects on the community as more people kind of take on this role.
It's hard for me to say because I'm still pretty new to this whole spectrum of what can happen and what is happening.
And I know that when you, you know, are caring for a loved one with dementia, you know, sometimes you're faced with tough decisions that have to be made about the care of your, you know, your loved one, whether it's, you know, whether they should be driving or whether, you know, it's time to put them in a facility. And Chris, I don't know, were you ever faced with those really tough decisions? And
Definitely. Like the one that you mentioned about driving, you know, I can think very clearly of a day when my mom was driving and she drove from Westby to Onalaska and came back home hours later very upset. And she said, you know, I went to go visit my daughter, Beth, and I couldn't find her. And my sister had moved a year earlier, and she no longer lived where my mom was trying to find her. But she had forgotten, and at that time when she was very scared of what was going on, she stopped at a Quick Trip to ask for help, but she wasn't able to come up with what her daughter's name was. She wasn't able to come up with what the address was. She just knew she was lost, but she couldn't get help because she couldn't tell anyone who she was trying to find. And, you know, so that was definitely an eye-opening experience. It was very scary. She luckily knew the highway well enough to get back home. But, yeah, then it was made the decision that day, like, driving is not going to happen anymore. And to see how that changed my mom, she knew she lost her freedom that day. And she forever was commenting on how we took that away from her. You know, and obviously it's for their safety, but it was so hard on her. And same thing with deciding when you need more care. We went through adult daycare, and we had individuals caring for my mom. And as the different behaviors kept changing, there were times that she would no longer go with another caregiver. She wanted me only, and there was nothing I could do to get her to get into a vehicle with another person that wasn't me. And then more behaviors of depression and anxiety and then aggression towards her grandchildren. And those different choices to decide, you know, we not only want to be, we want to be wonderful caregivers, but we also need to make sure she's safe and our families are safe. And that's when we really had to start looking into coming up with a facility, because things were progressing so quickly that we knew what we were doing probably just wasn't going to be enough for everyone to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
So very, very difficult decisions, though.
You know, you mentioned that was, you know, hard on your mother, but I'm sure it was also hard on you to have to make those decisions for a parent, you know?
Right, and to try to explain to her when she was no longer capable of really understanding why it was that we would take something away from her. And, it, you know, and we could tell her over and over it was for her safety and remind her of that experience, but 2 minutes later, that conversation was gone, and it was back to, you know, why are you guys doing this to me? So, yeah, definitely a lot of stress on her and on us when that understanding just isn't there anymore.
And Amy, you know, as someone who is a caregiver in many ways for caregivers, you know, how do you help people navigate that difficulty? And I'm sure some people experience guilt, you know, that hardship.
And yeah, yes, guilt is huge. And I think that when like Chris said, when safety becomes the concern, and each caregiver has to recognize, I think about when is that moment going to come where they're going to have to make that decision of whether this is safe to do at home anymore? Because the goal is to keep the person at home as long as they can keep them safe. And also, so it doesn't take a toll on your own health. I see a lot of caregivers who begin dealing with their own health problems due to the stress of caregiving. So they're neglecting maybe going to their own doctor's appointments or taking care of themselves because they are trying so hard to do their best to care for the other person. And that's a 24/7 job that a lot of people, it just takes a toll on them. So I talk a lot to caregivers about you know, taking good care of yourself as well, trying some of the services in the community, but also being aware of the long-term care options in our community, memory care, And there's great places, again, in La Crosse County that provide that. And starting to tour and look before you need it, just so you can see what is out there, what are my options. Educate yourself. And you can always put somebody on a waiting list. Even if you're not ready, they'll put you on a waiting list. And the facility will call you. If you're not ready, you just remain on the waiting list. So doing things like that, being proactive and thinking ahead, and then if something would happen, it's not a crisis and you're more prepared.
But I'm sure that a lot of times maybe denial of the situation can also have an effect on that. If, you know, encouraging people to be proactive is one thing, but if they're, you know, can be in denial about the situation, I'm sure that's also hard.
Yes, that is difficult. And sometimes the spouse is willing to look at those things, but maybe the adult children aren't willing to look at that, and maybe the spouse or the partner can really see the day-to-day problems that are happening when sometimes the adult children don't see that, and sometimes the adult children that are here in the area see it, but maybe the brother or sister that lives out of state, you know, there can be so many family dynamics that, and denial is huge. And everybody has to process that in their own way. It's a type of, I think, a grieving process of getting through all those things, those feelings of anger and denial until you come to acceptance.
Mm-hmm. And Carol, have you experienced being on a caregiving team? Have you experienced times when people maybe disagree about, you know, how decisions about care and those things?
I haven't really seen any major disagreement right now, but the door is always open for conversation because we all come from different places and what we think might be a good thing to do. Somebody else can see another side of it. But this whole thing, too, with supporting the caregiver, it takes a while for people to even admit, obviously. I mean, if they're in denial, to admit that they have the problem. Well, that's not a problem, but a situation. I mean, it's a life situation. Mm-hmm. And once they've admitted that that is happening, and then how to actually put their head together, because they just start spinning out. They don't know where to go first. And this is where support groups are very helpful. They are basically essential. And I think a lot of people think, oh, support groups, they're just people who sit around and drink coffee and wine all the time. It's like, wah, wah, wah. But anyway, you don't have to put that in there. But it's true. I mean, you go to support groups and it's not that it's depressing. People are sharing their story and you learn stuff and you might not pick it up right then, but you go to another support group or you talk about something and you start to hear similar things and you learn things about the community. You learn things about, well, other people are dealing with this way and maybe I can do some of that. You know, it's a support group. So and it's a great thing to be part of. But it takes a little convincing for people to want to participate.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about resources and supports for people who care for loved ones with dementia. We're here with Carol Monsebraten, a team leader for a Share the Care team here in La Crosse, Amy Brzezinka, coordinator of the Caregiver Coach Program, and Chris Bergdahl, a family member of someone with dementia. And so we've been talking a lot about different programs and resources that exist for caregivers. And, you know, I think that there has been also, you know, recent several pieces of state legislation regarding dementia care and also just, you know, some different resources coming out from state or local agencies. Do you think that there's an increased awareness about dementia and as an issue for communities to be thinking about, Amy?
Yes, I think we are. We're beginning the conversation. We have a long way to go, but I think that we are starting to break the stigma. I think that more people are willing to step out and talk about it. Like Chris joining us today, I think that's great that she can share her story. Because when you share your story, that's the most powerful thing. I can come and talk about resources, and we have a lot of great resources, but when somebody shares their personal story, and that hits home for people, and that opens up the conversation. I think we're doing a better job of that.
Mm-hmm. And one particular resource that we've seen come out in Wisconsin is the Dementia Friendly Employer Toolkit. And I don't know if you're familiar with that program at all, if you want to talk a little bit about it.
Okay. I'm trying to remember the Dementia Friendly
Employer Toolkit.
Oh, yes.
So
to create the dementia friendly community.
Right.
Right. And in our area, we are beginning to look at this and how that will come into place in our community. But we haven't done the direct, that's the education to the businesses, so that they understand how a customer may come in with dementia, maybe how to interact with them differently. We're heading in that direction here, though, soon.
And I think another, part of what's been happening is also trying to educate employers about, okay, maybe you have an employee who is acting as a caregiver. And, you know, what do they need that's different than maybe other employees? And how can you be more accommodating to their situation? Do you think that that's something that, you know, employers are going to go for? Or is that, you know, kind of something to work for in the future?
I think that's that creative thinking. I mean, we're going to have to, because healthcare is so expensive and people are trying to care for people safely and affordably. And it's more affordable to keep someone in their home with some supports, programs, home care at this time, until going into a facility, which can be $8,000 to $10,000 a month. So I think that employers will have to consider, and I think they are starting to consider, that this role of the family caregiver and allowing people to take time off to assist their parents and do those things.
And Chris, you know, is this something that you maybe wish your employer had, you know, had access to, this toolkit of understanding your situation as a caregiver? Or do you feel like, you know, maybe there are employers that are already kind of accommodating to that situation?
That's a good question. I guess I'm not really sure. I mean, I was fortunate enough that I have care for my mom as well, with my sisters and I working together as a team, so we could each take our time. But yeah, definitely when you're looking at the amount of days that you are available to take off, and you add in your own family, your own children's dentist and orthodontist appointments and all of that, and then you throw in your parents' appointments, and then things come up where, oh, they're not feeling well. So it definitely sinks into the sick leave that you have, definitely makes it more difficult. So I can imagine that there'd be a lot of employers where that would definitely, you know, be an issue when there's multiple days that you're needing to take off for things that are kind of unforeseen. So I could see where that's important to plan ahead. My situation, luckily, you know, I've had help where that hasn't been so hard on just myself, but sharing that responsibility with others makes that easier. But I definitely think that is a good idea to be thinking forward, especially when the population of people with dementia is growing so rapidly.
Right. And, you know, when you, you know, first kind of stepped into that role of caregiver and first started, you know, needing to have those conversations with people about how your life had changed, you know, did you find that people were, you know, kind of aware of dementia and the challenges that come with it? You know, do you feel like awareness has kind of grown about the issue?
I feel like it has. I think so. The one thing that, you know, was an experience to me and still continues to be is how dementia is kind of like this overall term, but it just, there's so many intricate pieces for each individual within that. And I could say that what I would describe as my mom's issues within dementia or Alzheimer's, how it began and has continually changed. So from week to week, month to month, what I may have been struggling with completely changes. You know, it might be 1 month where, she had a lot of suspicions. That kind of was a behavior she went through. And then the next month, it might be something more like the sundowning. And it continually changes. So that, to me, was something eye-opening, that once you kind of think you are beginning to understand the disease, it changes. And so that's one thing that I think that the people around me probably have learned, too, is that it's not just a steady course that runs and the decline just continues, but it changes constantly. So I guess the thing that I notice most about friends and colleagues around me are them learning through seeing what I'm going through. And I think that that is really a good experience. You know, for example, I take my mom to church each Sunday, and each week people see how she's changed and what's different, what's hard for that day. And I think so often people will come up to me after church and say, you know, I see your mom is changing. I see things are becoming harder. You know, thank you for caring for her. And I think just having us be out in public and letting other people see and be aware of, like, this disease is quite a struggle, but, you know, you just keep working with it and you keep changing yourself and helping them. And I think that's kind of the biggest thing for me, is just us being out where our friends and family and colleagues are out, and they're learning a lot from just living the experience with us.
And Chris, you know, we've been talking a lot about the emotional, the stress, the restraints on time, but, you know, have you experienced any moments of joy or positives of being a caregiver for your mom?
Definitely, yes. There are those moments where maybe she's had a really bad day, and then I have to kind of dig deep and think, you know, what is it that she's always loved her whole life through that could change the situation? And for my mom, it's music. And so I pulled out music that I knew from her past she loved, and put music on, and all of a sudden her mood has changed. And, I mean, it's gone as far as we would joke over the summer that sometimes our days would be rough, but evening was a good time, and we'd told our neighbors, if you see a group of people dancing on our deck in the evening, this is typical. This is the best part of our day. And we put on music, maybe even have a glass of wine, and dance. And I'd get my husband and my children out there dancing, too. And those moments when she would come back to life with the things that she loved, those moments are, like, just some of the most special moments. So definitely, you know, things pop up that are wonderful, or moments when words have escaped her for so long, but she'll turn to me and say, "You're the one that I love." And that sentence just flowed out of her mouth. Definitely huge moments of joy, you know, and they can be few and far in between, but when they come, they're very, very special.
And Carol, you know, as a member of a caregiving team, why is it important to focus on maybe these positives, these moments of joy in caregiving when you're you know, helping someone through this process?
I think it's out of love. I mean, you just automatically, we respect each other. We're together because we all care about each other. And because we have known each other, we know things about each other. And it's true what Chris had said about music that runs deep. With many people, certain types of music might be more preferred than others, but still, I mean, it is. It's a wonderful way to connect. But I also find that in the woman that we are sharing the care with, when her face lights up with something that just has really caused her to just be delighted with something, it's like the light that I see in her eyes, it's like, whew, you know, it's a big thing for me. It feels so good. And I know she feels good. So we're just sitting there grinning at each other, feeling good. So it's very fulfilling because it's a relationship. It's a caring relationship, and it works both ways.
And Amy, you know, through your work, how do you facilitate bringing about those moments? So, you know, the moments that get people through the hard times.
That's the favorite part of my job. I love doing the memory cafes, and you know, where we bring in music and art, and it's so great for us to be creative and to, and people think, well, I'm not creative, I'm not artistic. Well, it can be anything. It can be dancing, music, it can be photography, it can be, you know, art is anything that brings out that joy and creative side to you, and that's what the Memory Cafes are about. And I hope to have more of those in our area.
We've been talking with Amy Brzezinka, coordinator of the Caregiver Coach Program, Carol Monsebraten, a team leader of a Share the Care team here in La Crosse County, and Chris Bergdahl, a family member of someone with dementia, about the joys and the challenges of caregiving for loved ones with dementia. Today's show is the third in our monthly series on aging in Wisconsin and neighboring states. Every month, we hope to explore a new issue related to the growing population of people 65 and older in our region. In April, during the next show in our series, we'll talk about healthy aging in the Cooley region, focusing on what programs and resources are available for people to stay active as they reach 65 years and older. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find links to some of the resources and programs for dementia caregivers that we talked about today. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.